This is Michael Hyatt, and this is the Platform Building Teleseminar with me and with my good friend, Jeff Goins. So if you're on this line and that's what you're expecting, you're at the right place. And if you're not, you might want to stay around anyway. It will probably be a lot of fun. Jeff is a full-time author, blogger, and speaker. He's the author of a great book, which I had the privilege of writing the foreword to, called Wrecked, When a Broken World Slams into Your Comfortable Life. And he frequently speaks and writes about how to make a difference in the world through our words and actions. And you guys, if you don't know, you can follow him at goinswriter.com. I recommend Jeff to everybody who's serious about building a platform, because he's not an armchair theoretician. He's a guy that's really done it. So, Jeff, welcome to the call.
Thanks, Michael. It's great to be here. I'm honored to spend this next hour with everybody.
I can't wait to get into it. We always have a good time when we're together. Well, here's how this is going to unfold in tonight's call. I just want to kind of set this up, and then, Jeff, I'm going to turn a bunch of this over to you. I've got some questions to ask you. But I'm going to be interviewing Jeff, and he's going to share, and we advertise this on my blog, but how he attracted an audience of over 100,000 monthly readers. He's going to share how he built one of the most popular writing blogs on the web and how he became a professional author and speaker in less than 2 years. I love this story. And we'll also talk about a special offer we have for those of you who are ready to go deeper. We'll do that later in the teleseminar. If you want to follow along on Twitter, or if you've got a question or a comment, I'm going to do my best to follow this, but we're going to use the hashtag PlatformBuilding, all one word. And at the end of this call, we'll take your questions. We'll open it up for live questions, and the call is going to last approximately about an hour. So, Jeff, are you ready to get started?
I am ready.
Okay. So, let's start with this. You've done something that most bloggers and writers want to do, but don't. In 2 years, you've gone from being a beginning blogger to a published author, as well as a full-time writer and an entrepreneur. The question everybody wants to know, how did you do it?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and it's a, you know, it's a big question, and you know, I think we just need to kind of take it one step at a time. So the first thing that I did, which is probably the hardest thing, is I started. I, for years, dreamed of becoming an author. In fact, I remember Saturday mornings, early into my marriage, I would get up, brew, you know, French press pot of coffee, and I'd go sit on our porch and I would type on my laptop, and I would write for hours, just inspired, and I would, you know, write these essays or stories or just thoughts about whatever, and I would dream of someday publishing these words. And then, you know, maybe 2 or 3 hours later, I would shut the laptop, and those words, for most part, would never see the light of day. And my wife, for years, would say, "Hey, when are you going to publish that book?" And I said, "Oh, no, no, no. Like, that's not going to happen." And she knew something that took me years to believe, that I was a writer. And so something interesting happened a few years ago where a friend challenged me, who knew I wasn't really content where I was in life. I wasn't unhappy. I just wanted more. And I really had this strong compulsion to want to write, but I didn't really know how to get started or what to do. And a friend said, "So, you know, what's your dream?" And I said, I don't really have one of those. And he kind of pressed me, and I admitted that it was to be a writer. And he just looked at me, and he said these words that I've shared before, but I'll never forget. He said, "You're a writer. You just need to write. You already are this thing that you want to be. Now it's a matter of believing it and doing it." And a few months later, I started a blog. And I didn't just start another blog, because I had done that before. I decided, I mean, this is all part of starting, I decided to take this seriously. I wasn't going to, you know, do 75% or 80%, I was going to do 100%, so that if this didn't work, and all I was trying to do was get a book published, but if this didn't work, I knew that it wasn't a failure of effort, that it just wasn't in the cards. And so I went for it, you know, and I started guest posting like crazy. I started writing a blog post a day on my site, and then often guest posting on another site. at least once or twice a week. I started networking with people, which was something I was really afraid of, and I started finding ways to be generous and give back to this very small community I had started to build. And within a year, I had built an email list of about 10,000 people, and on a regular basis, over 50,000 people were visiting my blog. So, you know, that's kind of racing through all of the steps, but I think it's really important to decide to do something, because I know I speak with a lot of writers and I can relate to it, because I've been blogging and trying to do this thing professionally for 6 years, and for 4 years I've failed. And part of it was because I really wasn't all in. You know, I was afraid of failure, and so I was holding back, or I was spreading myself too thin. And for a year, I didn't do that. I hyper-focused on building my craft and building my audience. And, you know, I don't think everybody's situation is different, but I do believe that if you do the work, you will see results. And that's what I saw.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, because I've certainly seen that as well. But I just want to go back to that decision that you made, and we've had this conversation before, but I think it's really important. You didn't wait for somebody to appoint you or to pass some magical line that, you know, where you weren't a writer and then all of a sudden you were.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I want to be, you know, honest and human here and admit that every time I'm trying to do something significant, even on this call, you know, every time I'm kind of taking a step into this comfort a little bit, doing something meaningful, and this decision to be a writer certainly was that, man, I am scared, you know, I am unsure of myself. And we've all heard that quote that, you know, courage isn't the absence of fear, it's, you know, acting in spite of it or leaning into it, you know, whatever you want to say there. And so I was afraid, but I knew that I didn't want to stay where I was. And so, I realized, man, nobody is going to choose me. Nobody's going to come and appoint me. I'm going to have to do it myself. And that was really scary. But as I started to take steps, and I realized it was a little bit easier than I thought it was. And as momentum began to slowly pick up, my confidence began to build. But I want to be clear, like, you don't wait around for this epiphany and go, oh, I'm a writer, and now it's easy. Now I'm not afraid of anything. You know, I was shaken in my boots, and still am, because every day I'm trying to kind of take it to the next level and find that next challenge. But committing to actually being a writer and saying, I am this thing, now I just need to work like it. Like, this thing is actually on my business card, so I better own it, you know? I really put myself out on the line, and I had to grow into that. And I didn't just call myself a writer. Like, I started a blog called Jeff Goins Writer. I created a Facebook page, you know, where I was called Writer, Jeff Goins Writer. And I did, you know, print out business cards and put it in my email signature. I had to force it. I had to put it out there, because keeping it in the closet wasn't doing me nor anyone else any good. And the more writers I talk to, I cannot believe how much this is needed, where people write but they don't want to call themselves a writer. I think that the first step in this process, before you can even begin to attempt to find your voice, is to own the fact that you are a writer. Maybe not a great one, that's okay. You can get better, but you are a writer or an artist or whatever it is you're called to be.
You know what's so powerful about this is, really, I think the most effective way to change our behavior is to reassess or reframe our identity, because our behavior comes out of our identity. And I know that, you know, I experienced this for myself, Jeff, when I decided to start running. And I had a hard time, no pun intended, getting traction, because I didn't think of myself as an athlete or a runner. I mean, I was a guy that basically didn't start running until he was 50. But once I declared to myself, I'm a runner, well, what do runners do? They run. You know, it made it much easier to get up in the morning. And like you said, it doesn't take away all the problems. It doesn't mean you don't feel uncomfortable. I mean, I still feel uncomfortable as a writer and as a speaker and all of that. But you can't wait to get confident. Your confidence comes as you do it. And as you do it over and over again. So, Well, let me move on to, we were talking just as we were thinking through this call about these four steps. And anybody that follows my blog knows I love lists and I love steps because it just makes it accessible.
Absolutely.
So let's boil it down. And if you are on this call, on the other end of it, receiving this information, what's step one?
Right. So I kind of, you know, I guess this decision to call yourself a writer is like the prologue, the introduction. It's part of step one, but it's really, you know, step zero. Step one is to hone your voice. So, I mean, we're talking about how do you find an audience? Well, before you can even start working on the craft of writing, you have to know that you're a writer, and then you have to understand that there's really no such thing as good writing. Now, we all know that there's bad writing because we've read it, but what is good writing? I mean, ask your family member or yourself or, you know, somebody who reads pulp fiction, you know, or thriller novels, what is good writing? Then ask somebody who reads academic journals what good writing is. You're going to get lots of different opinions. And so one of the things that I encourage people to do is not think so much in terms of good, but think in terms of effective. And the best way to think in terms of being effective, and this is all part of finding your voice. Finding your voice, by the way, is not something mystical that you do where you go to a mountain top and write in a cabin for a couple of months and then all of a sudden it comes to you. Certainly there's merit to those things. I know that you sometimes do those things, Mike. But yeah, but really, I think as a musician, the best way that I can articulate it is you find your voice when you strike a chord, when you strike a note, and it resonates with somebody else, and it's in harmony with you, and it's in harmony with them, which might sound kind of esoteric, but, you know, hang on with me for a second. When I say something, and I don't know what kind of effect it's had on somebody, the power of what I've said is somewhat diminished, and I certainly believe that art is something that you create from deep within yourself. But I think art that isn't shared or experienced by someone else ultimately doesn't completely fulfill its purpose. And I think the same thing's true about writing. And so as you're finding your voice, there are three little sub-steps that I encourage people to do. The first is write for a worldview, not a topic. And so this, I think, is probably the biggest misconception, the biggest myth, the worst idea out there in blogging right now is that you need to pick a topic, buy a domain, and then just start talking about that topic incessantly until you become an expert in that topic. Then, you know, a book publisher will come and give you a contract to write a book, and you'll start getting speaking gigs, and you'll become the expert in that topic. But the problem is, what if your interests change? What if this topic is no longer relevant? Is this one way to build a platform? Certainly. But a better, more long-term way to build a platform is to write for a worldview, a paradigm, a perspective. And you're a great example of this, Mike, and you're one I use often, because someone might look at you and go, well, you know, he's about leadership. But then you also, you know, write about a fight you had with your wife or about technology. Or you might write about, how you teach Sunday school at your church. And yeah, there's probably this theme of leadership woven throughout each of these subtopics, but it's pretty broad. I mean, and it doesn't seem to make sense if it's a topic or a subject that somebody's choosing, but it does make sense if it's a worldview. And I look at somebody like Michael Hyatt and I go, well, his worldview, because I know you and I know that this isn't just your blog, this is your life, is essentially something like everything can be broken down into a simple step-by-step process. And I see you doing that with everything from the publishing process to writing to figuring out a new piece of technology that you're playing with, to how to lead Fortune 500 company. And so what's cool about that is there really is no end to the topics that you can talk about within your platform.
The good thing about that, too, let me just interject here, is that as a blogger, I don't get bored.
Yeah, I know. And people don't understand that. Like, let's say you love German Shepherds, and you just bought GermanShepherds.com from, you know, some big pet franchise or something, and you write about this, and you become number one on Google for German Shepherds, and then your German Shepherd dies, and you do not want to talk about German Shepherds anymore. Well, you're stuck. And the same thing goes with launching a platform that's more around a certain topic. And certainly you can do that, and that does catch people's attention initially. But if you want to go deep with an audience, if you want to build what we call a tribe, a group of dedicated fans and followers, there has to be a worldview undergirding all this surface level stuff, which is why on my blog, I can switch from talking about writing to talking about my next book to the birth of my son. And people are following along. They care because they're starting to resonate with my worldview.
Yep.
So when you're honing your voice, you want to write for a worldview, which takes time figuring that out. And it's a lot like this idea of musical resonance, where you hit a note and you see resonating means it's shaking, right? And if something has a resonant frequency, this is a little music theory science for you, it will actually vibrate when it hears a certain pitch is struck. And so if you hit the right note, you know, with your writing, it will strike a chord with people, and people will go, that resonates with me. It moves them. And that's what you're searching for, and that's how you begin to find your voice. The second part of that is stop worrying about good. I mentioned that before. Think more in terms of effective. How can I be effective with my writing? And once you understand your worldview, you can go, okay, like, I'm really targeting people that think this way, and they might be stay-at-home moms or CEOs, but they think this way about the world. And the last part of that, and this is very important, particularly online, and I know you've had experience with this, Mike, is cut the fluff.
Yeah.
Stop writing long, prosaic sentences that are more about you kind of feeling fluffy and flowery about your content than about the audience. Now, I have been reading the top experts on nonfiction writing.
Hi, everyone listening in. This is Daniel Decker. I think we lost Jeff and Michael, but we'll give them just a second to join us back in, so just be patient for a moment.
I'm here.
All right. Hey, so sorry about that, guys. I don't know what happened.
Are we back?
Yeah. You're back and you're good. Go ahead.
Sorry, guys. That's the limitations of technology, I suppose, but that has never happened to me in all the teleseminars I've done, so I don't know what. Maybe the stock market caused it. All right. Where do we leave off?
Okay, so sorry. I left off with cut the fluff. To cut my fluff, I'll just say in short, the biggest thing. I've been teaching writers for 10 years in just, you know, how to have effective messaging. And the number one thing that we have to fight through is how to say more with less. And it's hard, it's a challenge, but if you have a message, particularly online where we know distractions abound, and you want to get through all of that clutter, you need to learn how to cut the fluff and say more with less. Now, understand, that doesn't mean you can't write a lot of content. You can write a 1,000-word article that is completely fluffless.
Yeah.
But it does mean that every word counts. And this is an important part of not just finding, but honing your voice, learning that every word that you deliver needs to have a punch to it.
Yep, I agree. Let's move to the second step, because I want to make sure that we get through all four of these and we have time for questions. So if the first step is to hone your voice, and you've given us some great tools and handles for doing that, what's step two?
So step two is establishing a platform. And I like using the word establishing instead of building, because the reality is, whether you realize it or not, you have a platform. You have some amount of influence. Maybe it's not a very large platform, but you have some level of visibility, whether it's to your family, your coworkers, your pet cat. Somebody looks up to you. Somebody sees you as a leader or an expert or just somebody to listen to. And so it's important to understand that you have a platform. You need to understand what it is, and then how to further establish that and build onto it. And so one of the things that I believe is that there is more than one type of platform. And I think that people who, you know, kind of struggle with this, and I did for a long time, I go, like, I don't want to have to do that. I don't want to have to turn every blog post or article that I write into a top 10 tips for whatever, because it bores me, and it's not me, and it's not how I talk, and so why would it be how I write? So can I, this is a question that I hear all the time, can I build a platform doing what I do, or do I have to play somebody else's game? And the truth is, yes, you can. But you still have to understand how the game is played and what the rules are and how your platform fits into that. And so I've identified five types of platforms, and I'll try to go through them quickly, but there's a lot here. So first type of platform is what I call the journalist. And the journalist builds his platform by asking questions. And the only requisite for this type of platform is curiosity. You know, you have to be somebody who's just constantly fascinated with the way the world works. If you love doing interviews, then this may be your platform. Mm. And a great example of that is Malcolm Gladwell. Malcolm has built a platform telling other people's stories, and they're fascinating stories, and he's so good at it. But at the end of the day, there's not a ton of his opinions in his writing, because that's not his bag. He wants to tell other people's stories, and he wants to set up the data in such a way that you are led to a conclusion. So, I mean, he's obviously influencing you, but he is he's a journalist, and he's a journalist in the, you know, proper sense of the word, in the official sense of the word, but also, you know, in the unofficial sense. You don't have to work for the New York Times to be this kind of journalist. You just have to ask good questions.
Okay, good.
Second type of platform is the prophet. The prophet builds her platform by telling the truth, the dirty, ugly, nasty truth that nobody wants to hear, but as soon as you hear it, it stings a little. Two examples of this are our friend Seth Godin, who is, people call him a guru and an expert, but really at the end of the day, in his own words, he's just trying to make a ruckus. He's trying to shake things up. And the second example is my friend Jamie, the very worst missionary. If you go to theveryworstmissionary.com, you can see her blog. She and her family moved to Costa Rica a few years ago to live as missionaries, and she just told all the ugly stuff, all the boring,
wow,
non-inspiring stuff, and she built this huge tribe doing that.
That's awesome. Great. Okay.
Third platform is the artist. The artist builds his platform by obviously creating art, whether it be music, painting, entrepreneurship, what have you. And the requirement for this is an eye for beauty. One of my favorite artists is a guy by the name of John Foreman, who's a writer, among other things, including the lead singer of a band called Switchfoot. But the way John communicates is very interesting. He communicates the truth of a message, but it's couched in beauty. And it's not about the message is so much as it's about how he's portraying it.
Mm.
The next type of platform, I think we're on
four.
Yep, is what I call the professor. And the professor builds his platform on facts.
Hey, gang, it's Daniel Decker again. Looks like Jeff's Skype booted him off once again. So, sorry, we'll try to figure this out. Our line is clear and good. It looks like Skype's giving us a little bit of issue. So just be patient. We'll get him right back on here in just a minute.
So, yeah, one of the things I'm just going to say while Jeff's trying to get in about, I'm going to go back a step to the honing your voice thing. I think part of the way you hone your voice, too, is you just keep trying. You know, you don't wait till you figure it out to start blogging or start writing or start expanding your platform, but you just go for it. You figure it out in the process of doing it. And the thing that does is that keeps you from having to, try to get it perfect. And that's the great enemy of any kind of progress is, you know, trying to get it too perfect.
Hey, I'm back.
And he's back. There. Awesome.
Hey, Daniel, are you singing during these down times?
I am, absolutely. I bust out my banjo.
Great. Yeah, hey, I'm really sorry, everybody.
Oh, it's
no worries.
Let me just say, too, that voice that you guys are hearing of Daniel is Daniel Decker, whom some of you know from Platform University because he assists us on our live Q&A calls and Daniel, thank you so much for helping us tonight. I'm grateful. Your website, by the way, your blog is, what's the URL?
Yeah, I'm not a good one for looking at on that because I'm horrible with my content, but danieldecker.net or on Twitter at Daniel Decker.
I just want to give you a shout out.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
So, Jeff, let's get back to it. So you were talking about the professor who focuses on the facts, and let's just quickly move through these so we can get to the next step.
Absolutely. A great example of the professor is Jim Collins, author of Good to Great, How the Mighty Fall, several other best-selling books. And what Jim has done is he's different from somebody like Malcolm Gladwell because he has studied the facts so long that he's become an expert. He's asked enough experts done enough studying that he now is the expert. And so if you're a professor, you probably are obsessed with data, with facts, with getting it right, with knowing exactly how it works. The last type of platform is what I call the celebrity. And really, these people are well-known because of their charisma, because of their likable personalities. They probably have other skills, but at the end of the day, people are attracted to them because they're charismatic. And a great example of this is Tim Ferriss. Very smart guy, but really his platform is built on his personality and what he's done and how you can emulate some of his success. So those are the five types of platforms.
And let me just make sure, because you dropped out at least for me on that last part. That was Tim Ferriss, you said, is a good example?
Tim Ferriss, yes, sir.
Yep, great. So the four-hour work week, four-hour body, all that stuff. Great. One of the things I want to touch on, Jeff, on this particular point before we leave it is the importance of building an email list. And I've been working on email lists all day today because of a promotion that we've got going out tomorrow. And I was just reminded again that the email list is so critically important. In fact, it's the most important asset I have. You'd probably agree. But do you want to talk just about that for a minute?
Yeah. Well, like you, I didn't really get it. I thought email was, 1992, and we had evolved beyond that. But I started reading about online marketing and how people are earning and building influence and realized that an email list is an essential part of an online business and just a serious platform. And somebody put it to me like this, and I thought this was a great way to describe it. So if sites like Facebook and Twitter are overtaking the internet and making email obsolete, then tell me why. What's the one thing you need to sign up for a Facebook account? An email address. And so an email address is basically, right now as it stands, the most universal way that you can communicate with most people online. And it's essential to getting on people's doorsteps, getting in front of them when you have something to say and not waiting for them to go check Facebook or Twitter or even go, look at an RSS feed or go check out your website. You have their address and you can go knock on their door when you have something to say, as you're about to do, Mike.
So the key there is just to make sure that you've got a mechanism in place on your blog for people to sign up, that it's prominent, like it is at goinswriter.com, where it's at the top. I have mine on the upper right-hand side of my blog, but that's like the number one call to action on my blog. Because if I don't get anything else, I want to get their email addresses because I don't want them to have to follow the breadcrumbs to get back to my blog, right?
Right. And you only have so much attention. And so you want to ask them to do something small that allows you to build trust over time so that if you're trying to sell a book or host an event or do something. You're building a tribe because you want to move in a certain direction. You want to arrive at a certain destination at some point. And usually it takes a few steps to get there. And so the first step, should be to get their information so that you can follow up with them. And a great way to do that is to give them something for free. Seth Godin calls this an ethical bribe, like you give them a free ebook, Mike.
Yep, exactly. And it works. I mean, it's really worked steadily for me. Well, let's move on to step three, because I know there's four here, and I want to get to all of them, and I want to get time for questions. So let's get to three and see if we can't get through this in a couple of minutes.
Yep, let's do it. So step three is once you've established your platform, you want to expand your reach. And there are three little mini steps under this step that I recommend. First step is guest posting. I have examined all of the top bloggers that I was following, people that have built audiences of 100, 200, 300,000 readers up to millions of readers. And the common denominator for most of them was guest posting. They, and if you don't know what posting is, just really quickly, it's writing a blog post for another blog. And it is free advertising for your blog. You're giving away a piece of content, and so it's adding value to another community. And then if it's good, people will like it. And at the bottom of the article or the top or wherever, you're going to link back to your blog, and people are going to go and read you. And this is the number one way I built a large email list and got an audience of over 100,000 people was through guest posting. And I started small, and I built up to some of the bigger fish that I was initially intimidated to ask. But if you build trust with people, good work, you can kind of use that to create momentum, and you can reference past guest posts you've done to get your foot in the door for larger opportunities. So I guest posted. That was the first thing I did. Second thing I did was I started networking, which I hate doing. I hate the idea of networking. It feels smarmy and self-centered to me. But I realized that as a blogger, I had an advantage over somebody who's just trying to, pass out business cards at a cocktail party. I could tell people stories. I could interview people. And so I started seeking out lots of people offering to interview them for my blog, which had no readers, but they didn't necessarily know that. And something I found about all people is most people like talking about themselves, or they like being asked questions about themselves. And so I learned that you can network by helping people, by doing favors. It feels a lot more ethical and a lot more fun, and it's a lot more effective than just passing out a business card.
Jeff, just in a second there, one of the things that's great about that, too, is it really kind of plays into the whole generosity paradigm. And I think most people in their hearts, I mean, if they're good people, and most people, I think, do have this intention, they love to give. And this is a way to do it without feeling like, you're always asking, you've got your hat in your hand, trying to get somebody to do you a favor. You just go first.
Yeah, and the adage that my dad told me my whole life is true. What goes around comes around. And I like what Zig Ziglar once said, I'm paraphrasing, but you can have everything you want in the world if you help enough people get what they want. And so what I found is if you are generous, if you help a lot of people, you don't have to worry about ever going and asking somebody else for a favor. And it's a really fun way to live your life. The last part of that, of expanding your reach, is emailing strangers. I have been amazed at how accessible lots of people are via email. And Tim Ferriss talks about this in the 4-Hour Workweek and how you can find your way into relationship with influential people. And the best way to do it is to try to help them or just ask them questions, very succinct. But I have found that most people I want to get in touch with, I can email them and pretty quickly find a way to connect with them. And you might say, well, of course you can because, you have this platform. But I learned this when I didn't even have a blog, and I started emailing people like Seth Godin, and he responded. And that gave me all kinds of confidence to email lots of strangers, and probably over half of them will reply to me.
Wow. Well, I know you did it with me early on because that's how we got connected. We didn't know each other, although we live in the same town together in Franklin, Tennessee. But I can't remember if it was on Twitter or email, but you pinged me and asked if we could get together for coffee, and we did. And that was at the very beginning, I think, of your blogging journey, and it was great. I mean, this friendship has developed from that initial initiative that you took, and so a lot of cool things happen when you take initiative. I love that.
Yeah, and I find that most people are just waiting around for somebody to come pick them or help them. Or do something nice for them, and you're gonna have to act. But when you act, you can get a lot of momentum, and you'll find that people will want to help you get to where you're going.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's move to step four. What's the fourth and final step?
Yeah, and we're gonna knock this out quickly. Fourth step is publish yourself. So I recently heard from my aunt, who was so excited that I was publishing a book, and she sent me this message. She said, you know, your grandfather, who is like me in many respects, he was an artist, a musician, a journalist, and a writer. She said, you know, your grandfather always wanted to publish a book and was never able to. And the reason for that is he died when I was very young, and he was living in this old paradigm of publishing where you write a book or a book idea and try to get somebody to pick you, and if they don't pick you, then the book doesn't get published. And the really cool thing about the age in which we live is if you have an idea that you want the world to hear, you no longer have the excuse that no one will let you. And so you have the opportunity, and I think you have the obligation, to share your words with the world. If you've been given a message to share, there's no excuse to not put it out there. So the three parts of that are the sub-steps to that. The first part, the very important part of building a tribe, is crafting what I call a manifesto. And a manifesto is a short, shareable document that can be free. You can charge an email for it, whatever. But the whole point of it is it's quick. You can read it in one sitting, and it'll get you to act. So think about some of the great manifestos in our age that have, you know, created movements of good and the movements of bad. For example, the Communist Manifesto, I mean, created a lot of action. And it was just a short pamphlet. Craft that manifesto. You will build a community, and you will set the standard for all forthcoming works. And I did that with my first ebook. It was a 1,000-word document called The Writer's Manifesto. And that one thing I did, just writing it and giving it away for free, allowed my email list in a week to grow from like 75 people to over 1,000. So if you write a powerful manifesto, it can really kickstart your platform.
Listen to this is a critical takeaway if you're on this call. You know, yeah. To write, it doesn't have to be, you know, a 75,000 or 50,000 word book. 1,000? How many words? 1,000 words, did you say?
1,000 words. You know, I was exaggerating. It was 900 words. It was an article. It was basically an article.
Yeah. It's a long blog post.
That's right. Yeah. So next step of publishing yourself is to learn how to write for magazines and other online publications. And if you started guest posting, guess what? The same rules apply. Writing for magazines, writing for online publications is all about knowing the editor, sending them some good ideas, knowing the publication so that you can send them relevant stuff, and then, you know, having good content. If you've gone through all of these steps, you're going to have good content, and you need to get your ideas out onto larger platforms because it will legitimize your own platform.
Yep.
And the last part that is essential to all of this is, you know, let's say you've created a manifesto, you've built a great blog, you've networked, you've built this large network, you know, what's next? Well, if you want to get published, you don't have an opportunity. You can, go publish with a publisher, and if you've done all this stuff, guess what? Publishers are knocking on your door. But let's say they're not, or let's say you're not interested in that. Now you have an opportunity to publish yourself. You can, go the self-publishing route. And I am a big fan of everybody at least trying to launch one of their own ebooks on Amazon, because when you do it yourself, you just learn stuff and you realize how easy it is and how amazing it is to live in an age where overnight, literally, you can do this. You could write a document, you could write something in Microsoft Word or whatever you use. You could go to Amazon, get a free account, upload it, and in a day, in 24 hours, you have a published book. I don't know what my grandfather would say if he knew that's all that is keeping him from, that was keeping him from publishing his words. But of course, he didn't live in the world that we live in now. So when I talk to people, and they just say, well, I can't, or I'm afraid, or I don't know what to do. I really think you owe it to yourself and the message you've been given to figure out a way to get it out there.
Well, there's no reason. Like you said, I mean, I've spent my entire career in traditional publishing, where it's been the exact opposite of what you're talking about. And my head is spinning. And that's why I say to people all the time, we live in the best possible time ever to be an author. And to not take advantage of it, is some kind of crime. I don't know what it is. But all of us need to take advantage of that, because if we don't speak up, the world's going to be deprived of the message that we've been given and the gift that we've been given. So, Jeff, there's so much to say. I mean, I'm looking at the clock and I'm going, oh my gosh, you know, we could go for another hour and still probably just scratch the surface. But there are people that are going to want to go further. They're liking what they're hearing. They know that they've got to go further, that they need a little bit more equipping, a little bit more training, a little more inspiration. You've created this course called Tribe Riders. And I want us to spend 60 seconds on it, and then we're going to go to the questions, and then we'll come back for a wrap-up. But just in a nutshell, what is it? I'll tell people about the special offer, but tell us what the content is, why you created it.
Sure. Well, I created Tribe Riders because I was having conversations like this via email or over coffee. I was having opportunities to have conversations several times a day. I was having at least several a week, and I just go, man, like as you're saying, we could spend – I mean, it would take me days to unpack all this stuff that we've talked about because it's just a lot, right?
Right.
And so I realized there has to be some way that I can provide a systematic process to walk people through this. And so I really created the course, and I spent 8 months creating it last year. I really wanted it to be good. I created this course to answer that question. How do I build a platform? What do I do? How do I walk through these steps? And so Tribe Riders is an online membership website. You pay a one-time fee, and then you have lifetime access not only to the 8-week course, which is made up of 4 modules, and each module is these 4 parts that we've just gone through, so honing your voice, establishing your platform, expanding your reach, and getting published. And then there is a forum of over 1,000 members to support you. We have a really strong alumni network that love helping the next class of writers. And then along with that content, we have exclusive interviews with people like yourself, Mike, interview lots of people in both fiction and nonfiction and talk about how they built their platforms. And then there's a workbook to, you know, guide you through that whole process. And I'm really excited about this because this is the new thing that we're doing. Because we've grown so much, we're now offering small accountability groups of 3 to 5 people so that you can go through the content in your own little study group.
Yeah, it's so amazing. And when you read the testimonies about Tribe Riders, and I've heard from a lot of the people in my tribe who have gone through your course who just rave about it, especially at Platform University. But you can find out more. Let me just give you the URL if you're listening and you're interested in Jeff's course. You can go to michaelhyatt.com/tribe-riders and find out more detail about that. So, Jeff, let's do this. If you're game, we've got a few minutes left. Let's open it for some questions. You good with that?
I'm totally game, yeah.
Let's bring Daniel back because he's our administrator, and he can help us see who raises their hand.
Absolutely.
And so give the instructions.
And if everybody's good with it, we can go over a few minutes just to make up for a little bit of lost time. But if you have a question for Michael or Jeff, press *2 on your phone right now. If you're listening online and you want to ask a question via Twitter, use the hashtag platform building, and we'll follow that and try to bring in some of those questions too. So if you have a question for Michael live or Jeff live on the call, and your last 4 digits of your phone number are 8480, go ahead with your question.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Michael and Daniel. Thank you for taking my call. Actually, I have kind of a unique question. My passion is to promote others, lift them up, and really promote them, and recently signed a 2-book contract. I'm curious, you know, there's kind of that point where things begin to turn and the momentum goes quickly. Have about 20 to 25,000 strongly connected people now. And the question that I have is the point where how do you maintain the personal connection when the momentum is growing at a pace that it's hard to keep up with? I don't know if that makes sense, but that's the best way I can articulate it.
That's a great question. Jeff, what would you advise?
Yeah, I think that is a good question, and I think it's an important one. You know, some of us are just trying to keep doing what we've always done, which is connect with people, make them feel like they matter. And so, you know, when you get to a level of, you know, you're dealing with thousands of people, it's hard, and you don't want to, you know, become disingenuous and make people feel like they don't matter. I think that with every tribe, there is always this idea of like a tribe within a tribe. You know, there's a little, you know, subset. And so what I find is every time I do something, even if I have, you know, tens of thousands of subscribers, there's really a handful of people, maybe a few hundred, that are going to act. And the thing that I'm really interested in is finding ways to create little groups, you know, little pockets of activity and connect with people on that level. And so a couple of practical things that I do and that I would recommend is, you know, if you're going to send out an email or something, encourage people to respond and see who responds, you know, and if a handful of people respond, find a way to engage them in a really special way. The other thing I've started experimenting with is creating like little Facebook groups that connect with people about certain topics. And some of these people are in my tribe, some of them are not. All that to say, you have a large audience, but they're probably not all tuned in for the same thing. And sometimes, without, you know, driving yourself crazy, you can create these little opportunities where people can opt in. It doesn't take a lot more work from you, but you can still connect with people. I will say, you know, to kind of conclude, it's less about what you how you make people feel. And so, you know, taking a little bit of extra effort to not respond to every email, but maybe every few emails, or just noticing that person on Twitter or whatever it might be, that can go a long way. And I found that, you know, if somebody sends you 5 messages or is really trying to reach you and you respond once, I mean, if they view you as somebody that's high in demand and you can't possibly respond to every message, they understand. But I think the way that you stay connected is still by being intentional about making people feel like they matter.
You know, just one sentence there. Andy Stanley says, and I think this is an important leadership principle, do for one what you wished you could do for all. And so just because you can't do it for everybody, don't let that stop you. Just, you know, and I try to do this on Twitter too. Like I get a couple hundred mentions every day, and I'll respond to some of them. I can't respond to all of them. I don't even see them all go by. But I try to dip in there a couple of times a day and take a personal interest. So great answer, Jeff. Let's go to another question, Daniel.
Great. Yeah, we have several hands raised, but we're going to take one from Twitter. This is from Air Potter. If I've got that right, it should be a quick one. What would those emails to strangers talk about in order to merit a response? Awesome call.
Great. Hey, Jeff.
Well, yeah. What would those emails to strangers? I don't think it has to be much, you know, like Mike does with Twitter, I do with email where, man, I feel overwhelmed when I send a newsletter and I ask people for responses and I get, you know, 500 replies. I go, oh boy, like now I'm going to be a jerk who asks for a reply and can't respond to all of these. And it's a discipline to dip in and look at a few. And I think it's better, you know, instead of saying 500 thanks, you know, I'll say maybe if I have time, 5 to 10 people, I'll say, hey, thanks, first name, and I read their email, and I'll respond to whatever they said. But I won't take a long time doing it. I'll write, you know, 5 sentences or less and just let them know that I responded, maybe say something funny and mention their name. And I can't tell you how many times, probably 60% of the time somebody goes, oh, my gosh, wow, you responded. That's so cool. So it goes a long way.
I think the question actually is the reverse of that, though, Jeff. I think it's the question is, what kind of email would you send to a stranger, somebody you don't know, that
oh,
you
I
talk
see.
To? What would you say to get their response?
Like to get Michael to go have coffee with you.
This is a great point, a great example. I think 2 things. One, reach out to somebody and have something of value to add. And then secondly, you know, make it easy for them. And so when I reached out to Mike, I told him that I was a writer. I shared what I had written. I told him to go check it out. And if he'd be willing to connect with me sometime, I'd love to buy him coffee. And he responded. He was a CEO of a huge company at the time, and he said he was very busy, and then he couldn't do it for like 2 months. And I said, okay, that sounds great. Whatever date works for you, I will make work. And so, you know, we set this appointment 2 months in advance. And, you know, I think that you don't have to have coffee with everybody, but I think you want to not just tell them that you're a big fan or that you love them, but have something of value that you can add, or give them an opportunity to add value by asking a quick question that is interesting. But just, you know, connecting for the sake of connecting, you know, unless you get lucky, is kind of chancy. And so try to have a way of adding value or allowing them to you know, share their wisdom.
Here's what you should never, absolutely ever say. I want to get together and pick your brain. I mean,
yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
You know, when I get that response, what that essentially is it's a request for free consulting. And drives me crazy. But Marie Forleo has a great video on that. She just posted a couple weeks ago about how to respond to people that ask to pick your brain. But it's got to be more authentic than that, and it's got to be more purposeful. And when you do have that meeting with that person, if you do have a meeting, or even if it's in an email, don't beat around the bush. Get to the point. Have an agenda. Value their time. Value your time. Otherwise, I just think, you know, it's what makes people that get well-known quit having those kind of meetings is because they're not productive. And it's not productive for that person so much, but they want it to be productive for you as well. So,
absolutely. Great. All right, we'll take our next live caller. If your phone number ends in 8934, again, that's 8934, go ahead with your question.
Yes, hello. My name is David. I have a question, and really it's in regards to where you draw the line as to who would benefit from doing a blog. Certainly if you're trying to communicate ideas that really change people, then having a blog and leading a tribe, writing books, that's definitely the way to go. I'm thinking of, you know, engineers and doctors and lawyers who they want to do more than just be a good doctor, lawyer, or engineer. They want to change people through their craft. Is blogging for them, writing books, or something else?
Jeff, what do you think?
Well, I'm not one of those guys who says, you know, like social media is for everybody and it's changing the world and everybody needs to, you know, get involved in it. Social media, you know, is a big part of where the world is going, but I think sometimes people try to force it, you know, they've got a certain level of influence that they're trying to reach, or they're trying to, you know, affect a certain change in a certain tribe, but they're not quite sure, you know, if blogging is right for them. They just kind of do it to do it, and if you don't have a real clear intention and purpose for it, you're going to get frustrated. But if you're trying to reach people in the medical field, for example, you know, is blogging for them? Maybe. I mean, it's for doctors who read blogs, because I'm all doctors, and they are all about, you know, reading blogs, and it is, as far as I can tell, it's not a very exploited market yet. So, I mean, if you wanted to be a blogging doctor or medical professional or reach that audience, there's not a lot of competition. So, I mean, there's a great opportunity to be established as, you know, the leading voice in that. Is writing books and that sort of thing for that field? Yeah, I think so. I mean, Michael said before that the best way to get established as an expert in any field is to write a book about that particular topic.
Yeah, and you look at guys like Dr. Ben Carson, for example, who was at Johns Hopkins and now has a book on the New York Times bestseller list and is amazing as a doctor and as a writer with his perspective. And there have been a lot of doctors, Dr. Oz, others that use that as a vehicle for communicating beyond their own practice and having an impact on the world beyond their own, you know, the medical knowledge that they bring to it. Great question. We got another one, Daniel?
Yeah, we've got one more. We've got two more, actually, if we have time. Okay. If your phone number ends in 1953, go ahead with your question.
Hi, my name is Brian, and thank you all for taking my call. It's a great teleseminar. I'm kind of in the process of wanting to get started with blogging and writing. And I'm wondering if whenever either of you all were in this phase, was content ever a matter of question of having enough content? I know you spoke briefly on talking on worldview, but how broad of a worldview can you go?
Jeff?
Yeah. So the question is, how broad can you take your content? You know, I think that the reality is, I think it's kind of a 1-2 punch. And I mean, I have to admit that it is easier to focus on a certain topic for a period of time, and kind of establish yourself as, you know, this guy writes about that or this girl writes about that. And then once you've done that, you can kind of try out other topics. And as you do that, if you understand your worldview, you can understand that all of these things are connected. I do think it is possible to go too broad, and I think it is possible to stay too narrow. But if I had to give a formula, I would say pick a topic that you're interested in, but that could lead to other, you know, topics to talk about down the line, and understand the importance of worldview. And really, at the end of the day, it's not about what you want to write, and it's not about what people want to hear. It's about how can I add value? How can I add value to the discussion or to what's needed in the world in some way? And if you can answer that question with every piece of content that you write, somebody's going to read it and be changed by it.
Yeah, and the thing I would add to that, too, is if you think you might not have enough content, and maybe that's the source of the question, I don't know if it is, Brian, but for some people, they're just not sure they'll have enough content. I do think there's a sense in which faith plays a role, in the sense that once you get in motion and trust the process, the content has a way of showing up. It doesn't show up before, and sometimes for me, it doesn't even show up very far in advance, but it does show up. If I'm faithful with what I've been given, then I get more. And if I'm not faithful with that, if I'm just waiting, you know, kind of hoarding until I get enough content that I can be satisfied I'll have enough, then it's probably not going to come. Did you say one more question, Daniel?
Yeah, we've got one more live one here. So if your number ends in 3152, again, that's 3152, go ahead with your question.
Yes, good evening. My question is in reference to the various platforms. You listed five. Is it your belief that certain industries or niches lend themselves more favorable to certain platforms? Because I'm trying to figure, you know, which one would be the best.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that that's, I think that's definitely the case. You know, for example, somebody brought up the idea of, you know, say you're going to reach the medical field. Well, you know, you better know your data, right? So, you know, chances are you might be a journalist or you might be a professor, but it's going to be hard to be an artist, you know, because facts and figures are an important part of that industry. I do think so. I would also give you permission to create a mashup, you know, not all five, but maybe you combine two of them to create, you know, your own, you know, unique type of platform.
That's great. Great content. Guys, thanks so much for your patience and bearing with us as we went through the technical issues here. I just want to remind everyone that if you're interested in the Tribe Writers course, I mean, this is a chance to get in on this and really, really advance the ball in a way that you're not going to do on your own, or it's going to take you a lot longer if you try to do it on your own. But you can find out more at michaelhyatt.com/tribewriters. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Daniel, thank you so much for helping us with the technical part of this.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you, guys. It was a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening to this replay of this seminar with Jeff Goins. I want to take just a minute to give you a few specifics about Jeff's Tribe Writers course, which is fantastic. He only offers it a few times a year. He launches it for a few weeks, and then he closes it down for months so that he can focus on the students that have just enrolled and give them the optimal experience. Well, right now, he's offering a special limited-time offer for my readers. When you join Tribe Writers, you'll save $200. So you don't pay $497, you'll only pay $297, plus you get $160 in free bonuses. But here's the deal. This special ends tomorrow, November the 13th. After that, registration closes. Jeff will be focused on the new students, and he won't open it back up for enrollment for several months. And even after that, the price is going to go up. It's gone up every time now, just because Jeff keeps adding more and more value. So this is the lowest price you'll ever pay, guaranteed. Well, to get this special, go to michaelhyatt.com/tribewriters, michaelhyatt.com/tribewriters. You'll get the special price, and you'll see the deal there.